There's just a week left in Pride Month, and this year has seen an unprecedented level of threats directed at LGBTQ people. This includes the recent arrest of white nationalists headed to an event in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. NPR's domestic extremism correspondent Odette Youssef was there, but she says the events she witnessed that day are part of a larger story. Odette, remind us briefly what happened there.
Yeah, we were there to cover a Pride event, Juana, that had been attracting some really violent reaction from the right online. By the afternoon, it was looking like everything actually had gone okay. But then we got word of these arrests happening nearby. So we raced over and saw a huge swarm of police and sheriff's deputies around a U-Haul truck. Turns out the Patriot Front members had been packed inside. So obviously, this was a major story, but I think it was one that overshadowed a deeper story in North Idaho, Juana, about how that community has actually confronted far-right violence before and what it takes to do that.
Tell us a little bit more about that history.
Well, back in the 1970s, a man named Richard Butler bought 20 acres of farmland outside of Coeur d'Alene in a place called Hayden. He turned the property into a compound for neo-Nazis, and that organization was called Aryan Nations. It wasn't big. At any given time, there were maybe 1 to 2 dozen people living on it. But it was important. The Aryan Nations compound came to be a hub for organizing the violent racist right. Every year, they'd gather Klansmen, neo-Nazi skinheads, and others for conferences. It was also a problem for the locals, though. In the 1980s, Aryan Nations began a crime spree and even tried assassinating prominent local figures. And here's the thing, you know, this continued, Juana, until Aryan Nations was actually bankrupted in 2000.
Bankrupted? How did that happen?
Well, to answer that question, let's go for a car ride with a local lawyer named Norm Gissel.
You saw the driveway there? There was a big wooden structure over the top of the driveway. It says Aryan Nations, whites only.
The road that Gissel took me along was where a terrifying story began in July of 1998 for Victoria Keenan and her 18-year-old son. They were heading home one night after a wedding in Coeur d'Alene, and Keenan's son had dropped something out of the car. So they retraced their path along the road. So some of the neo-Nazis at the Aryan Nations compound heard the car backfire. They started giving chase, shooting as they followed the Keenan's vehicle. Up the road, Gissel showed me where the Keenan's rear tire blew out.
And she skidded into this ditch right here. She was right here. And then the Nazis then surrounded her car, and the window was down. They started beating on her, hit her in the ribs with the rifle butt. Her son was sitting, was cowered into the well of the passenger seat, and he was being beat on, and they were screaming.
Gissel and other community members who'd been organizing against the Aryan Nations wrote to the Southern Poverty Law Center to share the Keenan story. The SPLC took the case and ultimately won a $6.3 million judgment. This not only rid the community of the compound, but it showed that Richard Butler had badly miscalculated when he thought that North Idahoans would allow their community to become a hub for violent white extremists.
We were able to completely rid ourselves of that group and the kind of awful culture that they were trying to present to our community.
That's Coeur d'Alene's mayor, Jim Hammond, speaking 2 days after the Patriot Front arrests. But many people in that community disagree. They say extremism is once again making its home in North Idaho.
I have heard people say it feels like when the Aryan Nations were at its peak. It feels like that.
That's the voice of Jessica Mahurin. She says in the last couple of years, Coeur d'Alene seen a resurgence of far-right activity. Mahurin's the only paid full-time staff member of the North Idaho Pride Alliance, which organized the Pride in the Park event. For weeks leading up to the event, she, her board members, the event's vendors, and public officials were the target of what she calls an organized right-wing intimidation campaign. There were voicemails, emails, and even reportedly a death threat sent to a city official. Mahurin felt that this just made it more important to move forward with the event.
We are here for many reasons, and none have to do with hate.
So on a drizzly Saturday morning, Pride in the Park opened.
That means you hear protesters, you see them, They're talking. They're making you upset. You disengage. You be louder.
From the beginning, there was an acknowledgement of the threats.
This is our pride. This is our day, and nobody is taking that away from us. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
That's right. So.
But this time, it was more than just protesters talking. A few minutes into the event, we see a figure pacing back and forth near the gathering. He's in full camo, sunglasses, a hat. A mask is pulled up to the bridge of his nose. On his back, he carries an automatic rifle. He doesn't share his name with NPR.
I don't like this event. I'm protesting that. And I'm also here because I'm sure Antifa will be here.
There was actually no sign of anti-fascist activists. The Pride event was mostly locals gathering to celebrate their identities. That makes no difference to this armed protester.
There's so many places you can go and celebrate this. Why Idaho? Everyone is fleeing from states to try to have one conservative haven, and yet it ends up here. So where do we go from here? Do we go to Alaska? You know, there's not a lot of other places we can go.
Are you a native Idahoan?
I am not a native Idahoan.
For decades, North Idaho and some neighboring states have occupied a special place in the imagination of the far right. They envision the region as a conservative haven. Native and longtime North Idahoans say it's a big place. They have a phrase, live and let live. But that's become harder because lately the calls to arm have been so extreme. That bothers Christy Redfield. She's brought her kids to the Pride event. Earlier that morning, she saw a flyer for a pro-gun group gathering nearby. They were rallying under the false narrative that LGBTQ people harm children. One line on the flyer jumped out. It said, quote, "If they want to have a war, let it begin here." She asks Michael Birdsong, the group's leader, what he meant by that.
You want to bring war to us? You bet we will defend ourselves.
I don't hear anybody else talking about war except for your marketing. All right, well, your marketing mentions war and your full two-way encouragement.
You're going to have to wait your turn.
Encouraging people.
To these folks first.
I know, I'm not going to. I have the right to free speech
myself.
Well,
you do. You
and
do.
So I'll walk end. Away, but I'm going to say one thing. In your marketing, you wage war. In your marketing, you're encouraging guns. That's violent.
Redfield and Birdsong didn't end up arguing about their different views on LGBTQ people. They disagreed about whether it's safe and right for civilians to arm themselves when they disagree with their neighbors. That day in Coeur d'Alene showed just how volatile things could get when you mix false hyperpartisan narratives on social media, permissive state gun laws, and a sense of grievance among the far right as a Democrat occupies the White House. But Kate Bitz of the Western State Center says it would be a mistake to look at North Idaho as an outlier in America.
We really see Idaho as kind of a bellwether state.
Bitz's organization tracks anti-democratic movements and groups in the Northwest. She says Idaho was among the first to propose a ban on gender-affirming care for youth. It failed in 2020, but a similar ban has been introduced since then and may well pass, as it has now in other states.
If we're trying to understand where the anti-democracy movement is headed, Idaho is always useful to look at. But that's also true if we want to look at what the pro-democracy movement is doing.
The pro-democracy movement. Locals say national media often miss this part of the story. When Aryan Nations tried to make North Idaho its home, there was an unexpected side effect. Civic organizations began popping up throughout the panhandle and neighboring states. They focused on protecting and advancing civil and human rights. Christy Wood heads one of those groups, the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations. She says the recent influx of far-right residents from other parts of the country has made tensions worse. Among those migrants are avowed white nationalists. This time, they don't wear Nazi uniforms. And they have had some success forming relationships with certain elected leaders. But Wood still thinks these newcomers are finding out the same thing that Richard Butler and his Aryan Nations found decades ago.
What they find when they get here, though, are people like us, our organization and all the citizens in Coeur d'Alene and Kootenai County that absolutely do not embrace that.
And that's what some of these transplants will tell you, too. Like Ben, he only gave his first name. He was out protesting the Pride event and said he moved here 3 years ago as a conservative, quote, refugee.
What was the North Idaho that you thought you were moving to? Is this what it looked like in your mind?
No, not only is it not the Idaho I was expecting, it's not the country anyone was expecting.
It's a country that's becoming more diverse, racially, ethnically, and one where people of different gender identities and orientations have, over time, been able to live more openly.
That's NPR's Odette Youssef, who's still with us. So, Odette, it sounds like even if there had not been a U-Haul full of white nationalists on the day of that Pride event, there still would have been a big story unfolding in Coeur d'Alene.
I think so, Juana. And it's worth noting that the Patriot Front arrests wouldn't have happened if a concerned community member hadn't seen those men loading into that U-Haul truck. And when that person called police about it, you know, the police had already had weeks of working closely with community members and organizations to be primed for this kind of a threat. You know, it's really kind of similar to how Victoria Keenan was the single person whose experience decades ago brought down Aryan Nations. You know, if she hadn't been able to tap into a network of organizations that were primed to uphold the law and track these threats, things might have been very different.
All right, NPR's Odette Youssef, thanks so much.
My pleasure.